Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. At SFO, you can discover award-winning flavors and unique shops all before takeoff. Learn more about what's at SFO at flysfo.com.
Hey, it's Avery Trufelman, host of Articles of Interest. And I've got to say, I've been a fan of KQED ever since I was a little kid, and I would come out to San Francisco to visit my grandma. It was just what we'd always turn on every time we got in the car, every time we were making dinner and turning on the radio. It was always KQED. And then over the years, I've become a massive fan of KQED podcasts because this is local reporting at its best. These are answers to questions you've always wanted to know, interviews with exciting, unusual voices, necessary journalism, all told with love and care and artistry. And did you know that a majority of KQED's funding actually comes from members? It's just people like you and me supporting the programs they love, while also getting access to cool events, behind-the-scenes footage, and so much more. If you want to sign up and be a part of this amazing community, visit donate.kqed.org/podcasts to become a member today. That's podcasts with an S. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your support.
From KQED.
Mic check, check one, check two. Are we here? All right, we're here right now. Hey, what's up right now-ish listeners? I'm your host, Pendarvis Harshaw. For this episode, we hear from cook slash writer slash actor slash musician and all-around funny person, Nick Feliciano, who goes by the moniker Coco Machete. At age 10, Nick, along with her mother and sister, left the Philippines and settled in Orange County. Itching to find like-minded folks, Nick eventually left SoCal and moved to Berkeley for community college, and she's been here ever since. As y'all may know, juggling day jobs and side gigs to pay the bills comes with the territory of being an artist in the Bay. But for Nick, she's not pressed to let how she pays the rent define her.
The true art in what I do is just kind of like surviving. Like, my mom to me is an artist because of... She's never picked up a paintbrush in her life, but like the way she moves through life and the way she like makes shit happen and the way she like figures this out over that or whatever, like, damn, that's like such art to me.
Right now, as producer Marisol Medina Cadena and I dive into the splendor that is Nick's mind and discuss how she honors Filipino brilliance in all that she does. That and more right after this.
Hi, I'm Sasha Coca, host of the California Report magazine. Every week, we bring you stories about what connects us in the giant, diverse Golden State. Because what happens in California changes the world.
I love this place. We were once seen as like the place to be, California. The land of milk and honey. That's where you go to Sunshine State. But we just have challenges right now.
KQED's California Report magazine. New episodes drop every Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Rand Abdel-Fattah from Throughline. If you're listening to this podcast, you know that KQED produces exceptional storytelling that keeps you informed, inspired, and entertained. Their podcasts cover issues from your neighborhood to the entire country and everything in between. Support this work today.
You can help us continue to bring quality podcasts to your ears. Just head to donate.kqed.org/podcast. That's donate.kqed.org/podcast.
When we spoke on the phone a while ago, you said something that just really crystallized your creative practice for me. You said you were in your expansive era. Mm. I feel like that expression really speaks volumes about where you're at with your relationship to art making. So what does your expansive era look like?
It's more of just a consciousness whenever I can. If I have a moment to like meditate on something, it's just asking for guidance in terms of like how this experience can make me a little bit more expansive and a little bit more able to hold more empathy, more love. If I forget to remind myself that I'm in that space right now, it's very easy for everything to kind of knock it down and feel tired and feel unaligned. And so I'm kind of using that as a way to stay the course and create some stamina. trying to come from as much love as I can in these crazy times because it's harder and harder.
I know that you have a day job outside of mm-hmm. your creative practice, and maybe there's overlap, but they're not really contingent on each other. How do you structure your life in a way that you have the passion and the desire to still make art outside of like what pays your bills?
I always like kind of gave myself a hard time about that and been like, what's wrong with you? Like, why wouldn't you want to go all in on your art and like really be about it, live it or whatnot? And I think that for me, not depending on it financially has always sustained it. I think I just am one of those people who were blessed or cursed with an overactive creative mind that is constantly feeling the need to like express and release or whatever. But I realized that every time it got to a point where it was time to take it serious, or even like the idea of living off of my art or like any of that, I feel like personally, like it kind of kills it a little bit and it doesn't feel super aligned. I'm not super inspired by it. So it's just about like finding work that's not going to keep me there like beyond the hours that I need to be. And my brain doesn't get going till the nighttime anyway. So like I take advantage of like whatever time, you know, I have outside of that. And I'm grateful. I feel grateful that my day jobs haven't completely like overshadowed my creative work. You know, how I pay my bills is kind of like the smallest part of my identity. It's just no to careers and no to making art a career either. I don't know.
Balance. It sounds like balance, and also making sure that you work within what's best for you. You said your night hours, you know, being at home. You know yourself.
I'm trying, you know. It's the journey. It's part of the ride.
I love it. Diving into your artistic endeavors.
Yeah.
You're on the cusp of finishing your first comic book, so I hear, and it's a sci-fi thriller based on Filipino folklore.
Yeah.
Please tell me about the inspiration for this.
This has been in the works for quite a while. Inspired by a PBS documentary called The Cleaners, which was about a third party company in the Philippines that was being hired by like the Googles, the Facebooks, all that kind of stuff. Basically, when something gets flagged on any of these platforms, they're going to these workers, oftentimes, you know, in the global South, Philippines, India, and a human is processing these images. And they're deciding whether to delete or to keep. They're getting PTSD. They're like processing like 8,000 images a day, you know, just like constant, just the worst images you can imagine. One of my favorite folkloric creatures in Filipino folklore is this creature called the Manananggal. And it's oftentimes a femme creature. They stay in the trees. They're kind of vampiric or what have you. And their top half comes off, and that's what goes flying around at night looking for food, primarily victims or whatnot. They're known to suck the life through belly buttons. Typically, it's represented as a scary thing that, you know, growing up, if you didn't like go to sleep right away, they'd be like, oh, the Manananggal's gonna come get you. Like, as I've like gotten older and whatnot, I'm just like, well, like, what if it actually was like a creature that like went out and, you know, did stuff for justice? You know what I mean? Like, I just like made up all this stuff in my head. So anyway, I wrote this short one act play that was from the perspective of this Manananggal who didn't realize they were a Manananggal until they were exploited super hard at work. They snap and they go and kill like all the CEOs. Thank God, Bindlestiff Studios, shout out Bindlestiff Studios over there in the SoMa, 6th and Howard, the only place for Filipino and Filipinx performing arts. Like, they put this play up. It's pretty ridiculous, but I'm obsessed with this world. Like, it's just kind of like the prequel to this piece that I wrote. And so I feel like comic book, that's a good way to kind of not so much lighten it, but like not make it so realistic. The fact that it's not the real thing, I think, feels sort of liberating to tell the story in the way that it is in my head without it being too like real. And I'm really excited about it, and it's taken a while, but I'm glad we've taken our time because I've been collaborating with this incredible illustrator, Corpser. Shout out Corpser from Bulacan in the Philippines. He and I have been going back and forth, and he's illustrated the whole thing, and he snapped on the illustration. Right. Neither of us had done this before, but oh man, like with his vision and my crazy gross world building, it's nasty and can't wait to share it.
You've spoken a lot about Bindlestiff. Can you tell us what drew you to that space?
So it's just my mom, my sister, and I here in the U.S. Everybody else is back in Manila. I have like 25 cousins back home that I, when I'm there, like everyone's around and just kind of really missing like that sense of home or what have you. And so this thing happens to me every time I go back and forth where my reality gets really shook up. Like I can't tell what's real. I feel a lot of guilt of living here and not being a part of what my family back home has to go through to survive. You know what I mean? It's very, our lives are very different, and jumping back and forth is kind of a challenging thing for me. And so I remember being on the bus on my way home from work, and I saw that Bindle, I was in their mailing list somehow, and I saw that they were auditioning for Tagalog speaking actors. And I was like, oh, maybe that's scary. I don't know. And then a month later, I see it again. And so I was like, okay, they're still looking. Obviously, it's been a month. Like, maybe this is a sign. I should just go and just do it. By the grace of God, I somehow still remember, like, the Tagalog Pledge of Allegiance from school. I pulled up and I did the best Pledge of Allegiance with feelings that I could, like a fool, and sang my little song. And I guess they were down because they called me back. From that point on, I've never said no to anything Bindlestiff related again. It's just 30 years volunteer run. Beyond just the theater space, the amount of work that they do in the Soma neighborhood, like, over the pandemic, the artistic director, Irene, ran a program where a bunch of like actors were volunteering, everyone like delivering groceries to the elders around there. It's put so much purpose to my art. I've had to reverse engineer my own knowledge of like Philippine history and pre-colonial history. Like I wouldn't have probably learned that there, but coming here and being around other people in diaspora and learning about how other cultures have looked inward to be able to like get through our experiences out here. I feel like in some sense we owe it to really center like those who are still living in the land and the realities that they face every day and support their art. I feel like Bindlestiff does a really good job doing that. Like they're in direct communication with the community here and always trying to like bridge that ocean, you know, those thousands and thousands of miles, you know, so feels good. I'm so grateful to have found them and create a creative family of misfit Filipino kids who didn't follow the path.
You're a part of a crew called Granny Cart Gangsters. What does that entail?
So Granny Cart Gangsters is an open door comedy troupe, mostly Asian American femme multi-gender folks who have been around for 10 years. Thank you very much. We just celebrated our 10-year anniversary last year. Basically, yeah, we were a sketch comedy troupe. Our two founders, Aureen and Ava, came up with the name because they're always running around with their granny cart, getting on the bus with it, you know, like as you see all around town. People move when it's time to roll the granny cart full of laundry or groceries or whatever. It's like, okay. So that's kind of what inspired the name. We do 2 to 3 week shows once a year at Bindlestiff. We all write all our own material. And we, when it's time to put it up, oh man, it's a hoot.
Good evening. I am Lauren Goodman, and welcome to Quarantine Now. Our top story is about the Adobo Hoes, a retired roller derby squad. They are leading the way in roller skating security escort tactics, now being adopted around the San Francisco Bay Area to protect Asian American seniors. The community at large is now reporting feeling more confident and more secure with the hoes working the streets.
Before you got into theater, you were part of a group called Hot Tub.
And oh my gosh.
Yeah, we're going there. And you were involved in Oakland's underground music scene, a lot of warehouse parties. Tell me about that music and how that era really shaped your perspective on life today.
That era was wild, number one. Proved to be unsustainable. It started mid-2000s, like 2006, and we're pretty active all the way to 2013. There was so much reaction to, kind of like now, like to what was going on there. That was like the tail end of the kind of like Bush era, oh my gosh, Occupy, like the Occupy movement. So there was a lot of just like tension, especially in the East Bay, where the trickle of like what was going on in San Francisco hadn't quite made it over there, but you could start to feel it. And there was just a real sort of tension there. And I think out of that came just a very confrontational time, I would say. There wasn't a lot of like femme acts at the time when we were performing. And so it's three girls to the front, you know, it was like rough.
In that vein of like being, you said, confrontational, loud, using your voice to claim space on stage, sonically, what did your set sound like?
Oh my gosh, a battle. Like our producers, Jay Sonic, Funky Finger Mark, we would bring out an MPC drum machine and a ASR 10 sampler keyboard. Those were like our two things. They didn't have like, they didn't use laptops, nothing. And these are like really textured, heavy sounds that are going straight into sound systems. And then three girl MC chanting banshees, like wild women.
Looking at my Cassie, it's about that time. About to pick it up, set. I'm a hustle and grind. I got nothing in my pocket but motherfucker. Fuck it, I can get a fat loan if you can co-sign it. But who cares? I'm tripping, I'm trying to trade for the man just to get a couple grand in my hand.
The original concept of Hot Tub was going to be like Tagalog, Miami bass type stuff. I was always representing my shit. And so when I would write raps in Tagalog, lucky for us, we're here in the Bay Area with hella Filipinos. So every so often, like someone would be like, yo, you know, and really like kind of recognize it. And that's always like such a gift. But even though it feels like screaming it in the void, like it just feels great. I'm so glad that I was able to come up creatively during that time, because it never felt like there was so much to lose, because it was already coming from nothing. It was like so beyond DIY, you know, like there was no fear in what we wanted to say, and we could just confront like every issue, you know, creating like safe space for like femme energy to kind of aggressively take over. Really was so empowering to be doing this with two of my best friends, you know, Jen and Amber, shout out, just making the most noise and just trying to like get it out. Definitely formative, and it gave me the guts to do things that are creative and to actually allow yourself to express like some of the stuff that's going on in our minds. Takes so much guts. I'm so grateful for that time in my life, and I'm also so grateful that I've recovered.
It's out. It's done. It's
just hearing you talk, there's like this through line between the comic book, the band Hot Tub, the work you do with Bindlestiff, of like centering Filipino culture. Is there like a thesis or like a mission statement behind that, or is that just who you are?
I think about this all the time. I think it's just who I've always been. The very first day of school, of American school, 10 years old, Orange County of all places, it was just so clear that I was not of here. There's so many times that my creative mind and like this idea of trying to reconcile, you know, my existence here to home. Like, I still think Philippines is home. I was 5 years old when the Philippine Revolution happened. So in 1986, the Filipino people banded together, got the support of the military, and ousted Ferdinand Marcos, who was dictator for like the last 26 years or whatever. And so I kind of feel like I'm a kid of revolution. Like, I understand that that people can really get together and like do something great. Like, I believe in it. I've seen it happen with my own eyes. And I feel like coming here, there's always just been this sense of like refusing to be erased.
The last question that we have for you is, being in your expansive era now and all the personal values you have for yourself, what do you need from like the art scene or your peers or art spaces to do the kind of work you want to do?
Watching how, especially here in the Bay Area, watching how artists come together to like really fight for what they believe in and really like put their necks on the line and really support certain like movements. Like, it's fired up right now. And I think that, you know, what we could all do for each other is provide ways that we can build our stamina, because I really think that's what we're gonna need. And the more that we use our art as leverage and as power, and the more that we understand how powerful we are together, I think that's probably my greatest ask for myself and our community. It's like, figure out ways to build stamina, because we're really going to need it for the long haul.
Big thank you to Nick Feliciano for dropping by the KQED Stew to talk about all the important things and for making us laugh through it all. You can find her on Instagram at Coco Machetes. That's spelled COCOMACHETEZ. From May 16th through June 1st, Nick will be taking part in an original production at Bindle Stiff Studios called Dark Heart. Be sure to check that out. This episode is hosted by me, Pendarvis Harshaw. Marisol Medina Cadena produced this episode. Chris Hambrick held it down for the edits on this one. Christopher Beale engineered this joint. The music that you heard was courtesy of Hot Tub and Audio Network. The Right Nowish team is also supported by Jen Chien, Or Dursun, Holly Kernan, Cesar Saldana, and Katie Spring. Thank you all for listening. For longtime fans of the show, y'all know how we roll. But if you're new here, welcome. We're glad to have you. It's our honor to introduce you to Bay Area culture keepers and change makers that you may not have the privilege of knowing yet. So, if you enjoy what we're doing at Right Nowish, please share the podcast with a friend or a coworker, subscribe, and rate the podcast on whatever platform you choose. Every little action goes a long way. Okay, y'all be easy. Right Nowish is a KQED production. Peace.
Hey there, this is Brittany Luce from NPR's It's Been a Minute. KQED's podcasts like The Bay, Bay Curious, Mindshift, Right Nowish, and more all tell the stories of the Bay and beyond with reliable, human-centered journalism. They aim to inspire, make you think, entertain, and expand your understanding of the place you call home. Here's how you can support podcasting at KQED.
Showing your support is easy, and you can join Brittany in supporting KQED Podcast too at donate.kqed.org/podcast. That's donate.kqed.org/podcast.